Good morning. It is a blessing to be able to be here this morning, and some of you I'm seeing again, some of you I'm seeing for the first time. Now, if you're new, that's okay, but if I'm seeing you for the first time, it's because this is my first time coming on Sunday morning, and y'all need to come on Sunday night. Now, just teasing you a bit, well, just only a little bit, but we have been to this congregation. I think this is our fifth time coming here. We've always been on either a Sunday night or a Wednesday night, and so it's a blessing to be able to be here on Sunday morning. It's also a real blessing to have a song leader to lead all the verses of the songs. That's something that we do in Singapore, but we've been worshiping with congregations here in the States, and you start singing, it feels like you finished before you begun, so it's nice to have all the verses being sung. This morning, I'm going to share with you some of the things about the work here in Singapore. But I always like to try to, first of all, I like to try to make sure the PowerPoint actually works, which it doesn't at the moment. And then I like to stall until it does. But I like to try in the reports that I do to try to share with you all something that will be helpful to you in the mission that you do here. I believe very much that we are partners with God, and I believe at the same time that my work will be totally invalidated if those who send me don't do their work. And so we appreciate very much the fact that you join in other congregations or join with other congregations in sending us, but we need you to do your work so that the cause of Christ can be advanced here. I want to talk to you this morning about the one thing that technology can't replace, just to talk about your part of the mission of God. As you think about technology, it does feel like this sometimes, that the things of man, the things that man creates are actually going to outsmart man. They call them smartphones, you know, but sometimes when you use them, you feel like a dumb person, right? You're trying to figure out how to do all these little things on there, and it actually gets to be quite difficult sometimes. And we feel as though technology is going to outsmart us. Well, not only outsmart us, but even replace us. I read an article not too long ago where they are introducing driverless automobiles into the roadways of the United States. The state of Nevada has now legalized, and that is, it's a little bit of a blurry picture, but that man there has got his arms back. He's the driver for the truck, but the truck is actually driving itself. And the state of Nevada has legalized these now, and so don't be surprised if you see something like this if you go out there. So gradually the idea then is that truck drivers are going to become more like the emergency brake. You know, only use them in the case of emergency. The car is going to drive itself as such. And so human beings are being replaced. And that might make us feel as though human beings can be replaced in all kinds of areas. Well, there actually is one thing that technology can't replace, and no, it's actually not the typewriter, if that didn't surprise you. The one thing that technology cannot replace is you. Technology cannot replace you. There is no ability for technology to replace the multifaceted being that is you. You were made in the image of God. Computers will never be made in the image of God. And all that you can do is far greater than what a computer can do. Now, I know that at times it feels like that calculator is smarter than you, but at the same time, that calculator is designed to do one thing. You were designed to do many things. And more importantly, you're designed to do something that technology was not designed to do, which is to give glory to God and to equip, you are the equipment that God is going to use to spread out His message on this earth. And so I think that realizing these things is absolutely vital to completing our mission. It is becoming increasingly popular to, you know what proxy means, right? To do something through something else. It's becoming increasingly popular to evangelize through proxy. All right. And so what we're going to do in our evangelism is we're going to evangelize through, and then you say, well, radio or television or the internet. I have a blog and that's going to be my tool of evangelism. I'm going to post a scripture on my Facebook account. That's going to be my evangelism. And we think that we can kind of limit our evangelism to these kind of methods. We can evangelize by proxy. But when you think about the commandments that God has given, He has given you the commandment, not the technology, not the radio, not the television, and certainly not the internet. He's given you the commandment to make disciples of all nations, Matthew 28:19. He's given you the commandment to preach the gospel. And that command is for you to take ownership of first, and whatever other way you might do that through proxy becomes a secondary method. All right. And so as you think about this, I want you I've stated that, but I want you to have it firmly fixed in your mind. I want you to be able to be convinced that God needs you to do His work today. And even though these things are legitimate radio programs, television programs, even television networks, I know we have Gospel Broadcasting Network and others, even though these things are legitimate, they are not to replace us. They simply cannot replace us. I want you to think about what God could have done by way of evangelism. You know, God could have communicated to every single person directly if He wanted to. He has shown that capability in the Bible to communicate directly to individuals, and so that's the way that He could have communicated His truth. But just on a practical note, what would the world be like if every time you were about to do something wrong, a voice came from heaven saying, "I wouldn't do that if I were you"? Or if every time you were about to make a decision, a voice said, "Pick that one"? You know, what kind of world would we live in if really every single time there was a point where we needed God's input into our lives or we needed to seek the advice of God, if God just communicated that directly to us? Well, we would live in a world where there wouldn't be much choice, would there be? I mean, would you really go against the voice that was speaking to you out of heaven? Would you really choose the opposite thing? Would you have any choice as to whether or not you believed in the existence of God? Now, you would know that God existed. He would be a part of your life every single day. And so that's the point. God wanted to create an environment, and that's what the world is, an environment in which man could either choose to serve Him or choose not to serve Him. And so God does not communicate to each person directly. Now, God also, as we think about what He could have done, God could have dropped Bibles from heaven. He could have made it to where, whenever a baby was born, a Bible just literally appeared right there. And that Bible would be translated perfectly for that child as to whatever language that child would use as it grew up. And so that child, in fact, God could have made it to where people were born from the womb being able to read. And so that baby can then open up that Bible and know exactly what the will of the Lord was because that Bible was made perfectly for him or for her. Well, as you again think about that, the same difficulty arises. We have a God who is so dominating earthly affairs that we really have no choice but to believe in Him or not to believe in Him. We would know every time a Bible appeared that, yes, God certainly exists, and yes, we must believe in Him. There really would not be a choice along those lines. Now, it's interesting to note, and we'll touch on this a little bit later, but in the same vein of thinking, God could have also said, instead of in Matthew 28:19 and Mark 16:15, God could have said, instead of making disciples and preaching the gospel, He could have actually said, become a scribe. And He could have made it to where each first century Christian was a scribe, and that their full-time duty or responsibility upon obeying the gospel was to copy the Bible letter for letter, word for word, sentence for sentence, and send those copies all out into the world. Christians could have been made publishers of the written word, but they were not. And even though we ought to take advantage of the fact that we live in a time in which we have or own a copy of the Bible, do you realize that this book that you have in your hand is a privilege? And it's a privilege that people, you know, 200 or 300 years ago that they did not have. The idea of the Bible being in every home, and in fact multiple copies in most American homes, the idea of that happening is a relatively new idea in the world. As is the idea of everyone being able to read. Most people in the world going back 300, 400, or even 500 years ago, you would be hard-pressed to find anything but the very educated and the very wealthy who could read. And so, this is a privileged time in which we live, but obviously God had some other way of communicating His truth because it wasn't as though He was silent for 1,500 years. Or He was silent from the time that the New Testament closed and the printing press was invented. All right? God could have dropped Bibles from heaven, but He did not. God also, as we think about what He could have done, God could have communicated through angels. Now, God does communicate throughout the Bible through angels, through angelic messengers, through heavenly beings sent to communicate His message. But He could have done that in every single case. But I've already touched on the difficulty that you've seen in those first two points if God had operated that way. But I want you to think about what we actually see happening in the Bible relative to angels. You know, in Acts chapter 1, there are, as the disciples are gazing up into heaven as Christ has ascended, there are two individuals in white apparel who appear. Now, most people think that those individuals who appear are actually angels. And so, if they are, you have these angelic messengers appearing and telling these disciples gazing up into heaven that they need to go to Jerusalem. Now, here's a good question. Why didn't the angels just go to Jerusalem? Why didn't the angels stand up on the day of Pentecost, those two men in white apparel? Why didn't they just stand up and preach the gospel in the various languages of the people who were gathered there? Why did they send the disciples to do that? You see, the same issue coming up in Acts chapter 8. You've got an angel who appears to assist someone who is a non-Christian, but who does he appear to? Well, instead of appearing to the Ethiopian who is reading the scroll of the book Isaiah, he appears to who? He appears to Philip. And he says to Philip, you go and you talk to the Ethiopian. You deliver him the message of salvation. In Acts chapter 10, the angel actually does appear in that case to the non-Christian, but what does the angel say? He says to send to Joppa, go and find someone named Peter, and he will tell you what you must do. And so actually, when God could have very easily have delivered his message directly through an angel, what did he do? Well, he made it to where the man would be at the one who actually, so to speak, pulled the trigger or who actually delivered that message that was going to bring salvation. And amazingly, as you think about not just angels, think about Acts chapter 9. Christ appears to Saul of Tarsus. If anybody knows the gospel, Christ knows the gospel, right? But Saul is told to go to Damascus, and there he will be told what he must do. Christ then takes the extra step of communicating to Ananias and says to Ananias, you go and you tell him the message of salvation. Can you see something about the way God operates? He very easily could communicate in other ways, but he has chosen to communicate, at least as far as we can see in the Bible, he's chosen to communicate through people. And you know, very important to realize this in this modern world. God could have invented mass media. Had this really been the end-all, be-all of evangelism, then 2,000 years ago, God has the capability of forming electronic components and even teaching mankind how to use electricity and bringing all the technological advances that we have today to be. We sometimes think, you know, that this is this brand new thing and, oh, we're living in this golden age of the spread of the gospel. You know that as we publish our websites, you know how many websites there are in the world? There are billions of websites containing so much misinformation. And let me just ask you, besides websites and all this, let me just ask you a question that I hope will illustrate the point. Who or what has had the most influence on your life? Now, I ask that question in a particular way. Who or what has had the most influence on your life? And now, let me limit the answer for you. It is not a lot. You can't say the Bible, and you can't say God or any Bible character. You have to say someone or something in your life besides these. What would you say? Would you say a person? How many of you would say a television show? A website? You would say a radio program has really been the thing that has shaped and influenced your life most of all. You would say a person, right? I don't think I'm crazy in thinking that most of us, if not all of us, when we think about who or what has influenced our lives the most, we would say people. And you know what? That's the way it is. People influence us more than anything else does. And so, when you think about what God has done, has He not chosen to do the right thing in instructing Christians to be the ones who would deliver the message of salvation? Because we can do what websites and radio and all these other things, we can do what they cannot do. We are influenced through people. And if you want to really be convinced of the importance of the gospel coming from person to person, ask yourself this question. Why did Jesus come to this earth and take upon Him flesh? John chapter 1 and verse 14. Well, why didn't He come as an angel? Why didn't He come as this godlike figure casting thunderbolts all over the place? You know, in heaven, they don't speak Hebrew, I'm pretty sure. Or Aramaic is what they probably spoke in Jesus' society. They don't speak Hebrew, they don't speak Aramaic. Paul spoke of the tongues of angels. There's something going on down up there that's probably not going on down here. All right? And so they don't speak that language. Do they practice circumcision in heaven? No. Do they keep the Jewish festivals in heaven? I know that God rested from His creative work on the seventh day, but does God really take a Sabbath day? Think about what would happen if God took a Sabbath day. The world would... all things are upheld by the word of His power, it says in Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. God takes a Sabbath day, we're all in a lot of trouble, right? So God doesn't take a Sabbath day. And yet, Jesus, when He came to this earth, He lived as a man. And He lived so convincingly as a man that even though people denied that He was the Son of God, they never denied that He was the Son of man. Obviously, there's something to that. The idea of men communicating to men. So, if God could have done these things, if God could have communicated directly, if He could have made Bibles just appear, if He could have sent Christians to become publishers, if He could have communicated through angels, if He could have invented mass media, why did not He do these things? Why didn't He use one of these other methods? Well, I want you to think about our place in God's plan. I want you to think about what you and I have not only the ability but the responsibility to do. As we think about the communication of the gospel, God obviously felt that the best way to communicate His message was from man to man. And it's therefore an amazing opportunity that you and I have to take our place in God's plan and to be spokespeople for God. There is a song in the songbook here, The World's Bible. And in effect, that's what we are. You know, it is the case that going back 200 or 300 years ago, that literacy was not very, very common. But that doesn't mean that Christians were not, going about doing God's work. It doesn't mean that the gospel wasn't preached and that people weren't becoming Christians. They were going about that work in the way that God designed that work to be done. They were talking to each other about the gospel. The written word is powerful. Spoken word. The communicated word, more powerful. All right? Now, God, this book has its place. It is the objective standard that mankind desperately needs. Had God exclusively communicated His will through human spokespeople, there would always be that matter of debate. I say God has said this, you say God has said that. Well, we don't have that difficulty anymore. We have an objective standard that we can go to. But at the same time, are people going to this objective standard? Are people actually reading this book? It sits on many coffee tables, it sits on many bookshelves, but are people looking inside to see what God has said? Well, and you think about your own experience. How often do you look in this book and see what God has said? We need people to communicate the gospel. It's not only the most effective way, it's a necessary way. God is depending upon you and me to use our unique circles of influence for His glory. You know, there are people that you know that not only do I not know, but I will probably never know. There are people that you know and that you have access to, friends, family members, that are not Christians, right? I think I'm safe in saying that about every single person here. There are people that you know who are not Christians. Well, what are you doing to communicate God's message to them? Are you taking your place in God's mission? Are you being what God needs you to be? Because if you're depending upon some other method to get there, if you think that evangelism is basically taking one of those tracks and saying, oh, here you go, and then I've done my work with that person via that method, well, you're missing what is clearly there in God's book. People communicate God's message. We have to communicate God's message. And people are depending upon you to say something. You know, we sometimes say, practice what you preach. And people say things like, oh, I'd rather see a sermon than hear a sermon. You know, Christians have heard those kind of things for so long that they think that they can effectively communicate Christ simply by living out the gospel. But do you know what happens if that's really all that you do is that you just kind of live that Christian life, but you never open your mouth about Jesus Christ? You know what's going to happen? What's going to happen is that people are going to think that you're a good person. They're going to think that you're trustworthy, that you're reliable, that you're dependable, that you're kind, that you're a person who is good. They're going to say he's a good person. Have you ever wondered why it was that this amazing sinless being, when he came to this earth, Jesus Christ, have you ever wondered why it was that they put him to death? It was not because of what he did. He was helpful. He helped all kinds of people. It was not because of what he did. It's because of what he said. And so if all that people do is see your life and see your example, then they're not going to be converted to Christianity. You can't wait for them to ask the question because they probably won't. You know, you're living differently. It must be that you're guided by some higher moral principle. Tell me about that, please. They're not going to do that. They need for you not only to practice what you preach, but they need you to preach what you practice. They need you to state what it is that you believe in open and clear terms. You know, I feel like there's a lot of people out there who either are not reading the Bible or they're reading the Bible, but they just don't know what it's communicating. As the Ethiopian eunuch was riding down that road reading the book Isaiah, he probably had that feeling, maybe you've had some time in reading the Bible, you know, what is this saying? I remember when I came to the school of preaching for the first time, I grew up using the New King James Version, and that's a no-no at Memphis School of Preaching. I had to switch to the King James Version, and got this King James Bible, looked at that, and you know what I said? I said, what is this thing saying? The language was very difficult. I found it hard to understand. I had to really adjust my mind to thinking in that way, and it took some time for that to happen. All right. So people are reading in this Bible, and they're doing what that Ethiopian was doing. He's dedicated. He wants to know what God is saying. But when Philip comes and says, "Do you understand what you're reading?" What's the response? How can I, except some man should guide me? How can I understand this thing unless someone guides me? Do you know that God designed it that way? That He actually made His Word to demand teachers. Teachers are a part of God's plan. We are a part of God's plan. We are necessary. We are vital. Yes, it is the case that, as Ephesians chapter 3 and verse 4 says, it is the case that we can read and we can understand. But at the same time, most people don't. And they need some guidance. They need some help. They need you. As you think about this, I want to make a bridge over into what we're trying to do. Because I talked about circles of influence. I hope it doesn't seem like we get the easy way out of this, because my circle of influence, my Monday through Friday routine, is actually standing in front of a group of people who have said, "I want to study the Bible for 2 years." That's a pretty easy circle of influence to work with. I think that sometimes you all have a harder job than I do, and I really appreciate that, and I want to encourage you in that. But let's talk about what we're doing over in Singapore to try to do our best to see the message of God going out into the world. All right, Four Seas Bible College, just to tell you a little bit about it, is a 2-year Bible training program. It is a program kind of similar to any preaching school that you would find in the States. We have similar courses, a little bit less intense because we're dealing with people of a very broad educational background. Some of our students come and they've had forms of university. Some of them come and they've not even completed what we would consider high school. They have a very broad base of education, and they're also coming with a unique challenge. They're coming to study in a language that is a second language for them. They're coming to study in English, and we do that because we want to be able to communicate across a common medium, but at the same time, it's their second language, and there's a period of adjustment while they get used to English instruction and they get used to English instructors. All right, so that's what we do at Four Seas College. Just to show you some of our students. Now, this picture is a bit misleading because this is, unfortunately, it's the most recent one that I had. If you see the ones with name tags on them, those are our students. And we have at this point about we have see, I'm trying to add up in my mind, 13 students right now. We just had some that have left at the end of April that finished their studies, but 13 students, and they're sprinkled there among the faculty and guests. Brother John Moore came and did a gospel meeting here a couple months ago in Singapore, and he spent a day at Four Seas College helping us out. And so our approach at Four Seas College is to try to make disciples by making disciples. And so what we're trying to do is to train the souls that we have access to with the Word of God to help them to understand what they are reading so that they can go back into their home countries and communicate God's message in languages that I will never speak and communicate it to people that I will never meet. And so it's a real blessing to be a part of this work. I just want to share with you the lives that we've been able to impact over my time with the school. I started teaching with the school online in 2011, and then I moved there in 2012. And so the first class that I had any influence over was the graduating class of 2012. And you see here a diverse group. Most of the students, in fact, this class, it was unique in that they came either from Vietnam or from the Philippines. And so just walking through here, Fung is one of a very, very rare exception. She ended up actually meeting an American brother and marrying him, and she's now in the United States, actually, but that she's the only one who has that set of circumstances. Arnell is preaching in the Philippines as a full-time worker. Jane is working in a call center and helping faithfully the church there. And Rowena is actually become a full-time church secretary, but also assisting in teaching ladies and children. Jeremel and Gerald are working together in Arapal, and I'll show you a picture of Gerald in just a moment, talk a little bit about their situation. And then from Vietnam, Lynn Hi, Kim, and there's one other one. Oh, Fung was also from Vietnam, and I'll be sharing something with you about their congregation later on as well. Rachel, I'll talk about her later. She went back to the Philippines for a little bit, but she ended up marrying one of the students who graduated in 2013. And it'll seem a little bit like a dating service that we're running here. I promise that it's not. We actually during the 2 years, they're not allowed to date at all. No American student's going to sign up for the course at Four Seas. my wife is probably the closest. She's from Australia. But it is they commit to a very strict set of guidelines. And we have to do that because they actually live in the same building. And so we have to be very strict about, we don't even allow a male and female student to be outside together. We don't allow them to sit in the same room together, just to keep things on the up and up. But at the same time, we do encourage, obviously, friendships. And we think that the best thing that could happen is for our graduates to end up, obviously, marrying each other, because then you have two educated people in God's book. My wife has found, since she graduated, and I'll show you her graduating class in just a few minutes, she's found that since she graduated, we have a sisterhood, if I can talk about the ladies of the Lord's Church, a sisterhood that in terms of Bible study is far too topical, and that there's not a lot of really meaty teaching happening in these ladies' classes and such. And I'm not speaking about you all in particular, but there's a need for ladies to be educated in God's book, and that's why we're a co-educational facility. All right, so let me share with you some of the particulars. This is Arapal. Now, that looks like a pretty big setup. It's open air, and it's a big setup for a reason. In Arapal, they actually had a typhoon named Linda that came through and really decimated the area. And these are poor people, and they were made even more poor by this massive typhoon that came through. Well, there was a coordinated effort throughout Asia to assist the brethren there, the small group of brethren there, and they were then able to turn around and assist the community. And through that outreach effort, a congregation was established there in Arapal of over 200 people, I believe, that meet there now. And Gerald and Jeremel are working there with that congregation. And so he comments that he's still in Arapal doing preaching and teaching. And this is just, we get an email from time to time. They just kind of say what's going on, and a few pictures are sent. And it reminds me of something that I really need to do. I need to write my teachers more. Please write your teachers and let them know how you're doing and your progress, especially if you've had any Bible training growing up. Well, anyway, this is a really good story. I wanted to share this with you. This involves several of our graduates. This is from Rachel. Rachel's, as I said, she ended up marrying someone in 2013 from that graduating class. Or rather, she married in 2014, but she married someone from the graduating class in 2013. But anyway, she said, "My father was not a Christian even before I went to Four Seas to study. He's been studying with Uncle Arnell." Now, Arnell is a full-time preacher from the class of 2012. Arnell, they call him Uncle not because of relation. If anyone is older than you in Asian culture, you call the men uncles and the women aunties, and so that's just the way they do that. But anyway, Uncle Arnell, every time he's in Bacolod City, and sometimes joins in our study group. Today, after the preaching of Joan Medez, who is another one of our graduates, he walked towards the pulpit and confessed Christ. Now we are very happy that he is part of this of the kingdom, and so that's a wonderful outcome. It's very hard to convert parents. But we've had several parents of Four Seas graduates who have told us of the change they saw in their children and how that impacted them in such a way so that they were open and receptive to the gospel. This is the class of 2013. This is the first class that I had a full experience in teaching from beginning to end. And so we'll talk about some of the individuals here. Terry has become a full-time preacher in Malaysia, just across the border in a place called Johor Bahru, and we'll show you some pictures of him in just a minute. Pet has gone back to Laos, and unfortunately, she's become an English teacher. I say that because I'm an English grammar teacher at Four Seas as well. We teach English grammar to prepare them for Greek grammar, just like they do at Memphis School of Preaching, I shudder to think of someone taking their English notes that they got in my class and going out and teaching them elsewhere. But anyway, that's what she's doing now, but also helping the church as a ladies' class teacher and a children's teacher. George has become a full-time preacher. I talked about him, I think, on my last visit in a place called Wuhu, China. It's in the Anhui province in China. Jaslyn is becoming she's going to baking school, still active in the church and assisting in the church at JB. Victor has become a preacher at Ipoh, and he's been preaching there since he graduated, so coming up over 3 years now. And Bob is also continuing to work in Shanghai. Bob is not his real name, and George is not his real name. He's called George because of George Washington. All right, not George Washington, George Bush. Let me get it right. So that's a little bit more funny. But anyway, he saw George Bush and he said, "I want a good American name, George." All right. Anyway, Bob ended up marrying Rebecca, and they're a great couple, very mature, and they're doing good work in Shanghai, and even have started their own Bible school in one of the provinces out. It's a long way from Shanghai, but they meet in secret and they have several students. In fact, at the school now is a young man named Nchao, and Nchao attended that Bible school that Bob and the other worker there, Quan Tai Chum, have started. And anyway, James I'll talk about him in just a little bit. He was in India for a while, and I'll share with you what he's up to now in just a moment. But Alvin is a full-time worker in the Lim Ah Pin Road congregation in Singapore. He's a native Singaporean, and so he's continuing to work with the church in Singapore. These are just a few of the pictures that we've received from them. This is from George's congregation. You can see how they worship there in China. It's a house church. And they still have to, of course, anywhere, whether it's our Chinese brethren or our Vietnamese brethren, they meet in secret. Although the situation there in China is a bit more favorable. This is one of the souls that was converted there in Wuhu. And this is another and another. And they've had several people who have been baptized in the time that George has been there, which is encouraging. Because it basically, before George got there, it was basically his family and then some of his extended family, his relatives, his uncle, I think, and his family. So it's encouraging to see the growth that's been happening there. All right. This is George's wife, Lily. Lily actually came to the school for a year. She went back home. We were really sad that she didn't get to complete her studies, but at the same time, very encouraging that she's joining in the work and teaching children. And children are the same everywhere. That's one thing you realize about wherever you go, they're about the same. This is Rachel from the class of 2012. As I said, she married Terry from the class of 2013. And they're working together in Johor Bahru. They've just planted a new congregation on the other side of Johor Bahru. So there's now two congregations meeting there. And they're working now with that congregation and really encouraged by the way they go about it. Rachel is also helping with ladies and with children. That's usually, I kind of say the same thing over and over again, but they do that. All right, so this is actually from James's newsletter. James Williams is a 2013 graduate, and he's the only one that I've had so far that's like clockwork. He sends me newsletters and lets me know what's going on. He did not become a full-time preacher, but at the same time, he preaches a lot of the time. He started a congregation in Bangalore, his home city in India. There was a lot of family pressure on James to not become a preacher and to pursue further education toward the end of having secular employment. So he's actually in Australia now, and he is actually working with some of the people that we know from our time in Australia. He's obtaining a master's degree in Australia and helping the brethren at Windsor, Toowoomba, and that's just taken directly from his newsletter, as is this, and this is encouraging. He talks about the fact how he instituted a Christian fellowship club in his school with a few other students, and Natalie and Kelvin were some of the people who attended, and he's actually had Natalie, who has now obeyed the gospel on the 10th of January of this year. And what's really neat is that he's actually encouraged this new sister in Christ to go with him to this congregation he works with. They travel 2 hours on train one way. All right. I don't know how far you come to go to church here, but I bet it's not 2 hours, right? Well, they go every Sunday 2 hours one way to get to this congregation, and it's really encouraging that they do that. This is the class of 2014, and you can see a very beautiful graduate there. That's my wife, Chantel, and obviously she's doing well. By the way, ladies, if you want some very practical things to study on your own, she has a website called happyhealthyholyhome.com. Just remember a bunch of H's and you'll do well. Or you can just probably Google Chantel Marie Swain, that'll pop up. But anyway, she does a few little other things, but mostly Bible articles, some recipes and different things on there as well. So go to that website and look at that. Not to put in too much of a plug for my wife. But anyway, Jeanne, I haven't heard from. She lives in a part of the world where there's not much internet, and I know that she's working and active in the church, but at the same time, I haven't heard much about what she's up to. King came to our school from an orphanage, and he's gone back to assist in the orphanages there with the Agape Foundation in China. They're facing difficulty, and I'd appreciate your prayers for them, because the government has kind of found out what's happening with the Agape Foundation, that people are being made Christians, and that's not something that they want to happen with their orphans, obviously, from their worldview. So please pray for them, and especially for King, as they adjust to these government issues. Hip is another one of the brethren. We have five graduates from Ho Chi Minh, not from Ho Chi Minh, from Cantor, Vietnam. And we'll show you a few pictures of them in just a minute. But first of all, Georgie, she too went back, and her family she comes from a non-Christian family, but she also was able to study with her mother, and her mother obeyed the gospel after 3 months on July 18th of last year, and that's really encouraging. And Georgie is, of course, teaching there the children and doing a good job by all reports that we get back. This is the church in Cantor, Vietnam. Now, that is the church building, all right? If you can conceive of coming to worship and you're sitting cross-legged alongside of a bunch of other people, well, that's how they worship every Sunday, all right? We have these big air-conditioned buildings, and they're in this room, and they close those doors that you can see, those glass doors. They close those glass doors, but they also roll shut a metal door because if they're caught worshiping, well, it's illegal, and they're facing difficulty from the police. So far, the police have just basically been an annoyance to them. They haven't been allowed to get a license, which is almost impossible to obtain without bribery. Communist countries are beginning to weaken their restrictions a bit, but the oil that greases the cogs is money, and if you're not willing to bribe and do dishonest things, it's very hard to get things going in that part of the world. Now, this is an encouraging picture, not only because of all the people that are there, but we now have attending at the school our sixth student from the Cantor congregation, Yin. Now, Yin came to this school because she saw how much it affected basically who were her cousins, the ones who were our graduates and came back. And she gave up a lot to come to Four Seas. She was actually kind of the head of an English school there. It is an outreach effort of the church and supported by some brethren in America, but all of everything is in her name. She is kind of the one who dispenses all the finances and does everything. But she gradually worked to get other people to fulfill her responsibilities just so that she could come and study God's book. And I only had the opportunity to teach her for a week because she came in April and we left after a week of the first term to come here to the States. But I think she's going to be a great student, and we're looking forward to what she's going to do. This is another picture of that congregation. And I show you this show you. There's Alvin from 2013. Alvin and several of the brethren from Lima Pin are making yearly trips into Vietnam. And so it's good when the people that you teach are then going on and doing short-term mission work as well. This is the most recent graduating class. And kind of as it is, the story is yet to be written on these fellas and this sister. These three just left us in April. They were wraparound students, and so they finished their studies and have gone back now. But Jaden has gone back to Malaysia, and he is a full-time preacher at a place called Batu Pahat. The congregation is a Chinese-speaking congregation. So very encouraging, obviously, because I couldn't do that, but Jaden can. And he's also not only helping them, but there are usually wherever in Malaysia, I would say probably half of the time, wherever there's an English congregation, there's also a Chinese congregation. But there are very few brethren who are equipped to preach in Chinese. And so very good to add to their number, and Jaden's helping out. And Chris has gone back to work with the Klang congregation, and she's, of course, seeking secular. I think she's gotten a job working at one of the tuition centers there. But anyway, really appreciate you all for indulging in that little journey through our graduates. I know that there will come a time when I'll probably have to be a bit more selective about all of that. I'm proud of what our students are doing and how they're going out and influencing the kingdom, the faithfulness that they're exhibiting. And I'm also proud, of course, to have had a part in shaping their lives. And again, that's just me trying to use my circle of influence. Now, I say that. We also, in addition to what we do with Four Seas, we try to do our best to assist the churches throughout the region. I regularly preach and teach at other congregations, in addition to the one where we're members at Jurong. But these are the people I see Monday through Friday, and they've become my life, and really try to do our best to help them in the same way that I hope that you'll try to do your best to help others. You know, all these things that are happening overseas, it's encouraging to see that the Lord's church is making progress. Souls are being won. Exciting things are happening. I do not want to walk out here and have you say, well, pretty soon you're going to have to be training missionaries to come back here to America. I hate hearing that. It is negative thinking, and it has no place among God's people. All right? You are alive today. And you have an opportunity today, and you have an opportunity, importantly, tomorrow. If the Lord tarries and if the world continues, you have an opportunity tomorrow to go to work, to open your mouth, and to tell people about Jesus. It's very simple. You know, we make it so complicated, and we think, oh, I don't have the right evangelistic method, or I don't know the right evangelistic tools. The right evangelistic tool is your mouth, and it just opens up and you talk about what you are. All right? You share the fact that God has impacted your life in an amazing way, that you have applied His Word to your life. And, you know, people don't need, you know, you think, oh, I've got to have all the answers prepared because they're going to ask questions and all that. You know, when people ask you a question, here's what I want to encourage you to do. Ask them a question back. Learn from Jesus. You know, they asked Him, they said, by what authority do you do these things? What did He say? The baptism of John, where did it come from? Now, why did He do that? Because questions create curiosity. That's what you want to do, and that's all you have to do. And if you're not equipped to take that Bible study on board, you create the curiosity, get them to where they want to study the Bible, and there are people here who will take those Bible studies. I know Scott's looking for it. I know he wants you to tell him about your non-Christian friends and family members, and I know the elders are the same. I know that they want you to share with them those people that are interested in the gospel, and they are more than happy, more than willing to help them and to show them the way of salvation. God has an amazing plan, and you're an amazing part of it, all right? To see that the kingdom is expanding and growing. This morning, you have an opportunity, and I don't want to belittle this opportunity. We have not, in this time together, we've not had a lot of time to talk about the gospel, the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, nor have we spent a lot of time focusing on obedience to it. But if this morning, if you have been studying outside of this setting and you have come to the point where you realize what it takes to become a Christian and you've been waiting for some reason, I pray that you won't wait any longer and that you'll make that decision to be baptized into Christ. But it might be that you need to make another decision. It might mean that you need this morning just to make a decision to try to pursue that message of salvation, to try to agree, or rather to agree to just sit down and study the Bible with someone. I would love to, if I had the time to do it, I would love to sit down and show you from the book of Acts what God requires a person to do in order to become a Christian. But I know that other brethren here are willing to do that, and we would love to help you. And we would also love to do something that I'm encouraged that you're doing, to pray for you. You're praying for me. I appreciate that. I was told I'm card 27 by Brother West this morning. So be sure to grab card 27 out there. We appreciate that. But anyway, we want to pray for you. We want to help you in any way that we possibly can. So please, if you have any needs, we're going to sing an invitation song now. I want you to think about your needs, and if you need to come, come while we stand and sing.